I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, books for children and young adults. Joining us, Sarah Hines from Eight Cousins Bookstore. Good morning, Sarah.
Hi.
And Mary Cronin, educator, writer, and poet. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
I think, why don't we start, Mary, with the importance of reading to kids? It's a big, you know, people don't think about, it's a big deal.
We could talk so much about this. Well, as I was just saying to you, I teach at Cape Cod Community College in the early childhood ed department. So I spend a lot of time talking about the power of reading. And one of the things that I always tell my students who are going to be educators themselves is how important it is to build the vocabularies of children and their concepts, what they know about, what ideas they become familiar with. But most of all, to just lay down that message that reading equals pleasure. Mm-hmm. So often we don't love the books that children want to hear over and over again. But when we create that space, I liken it to being around a campfire, the book is like the campfire. Yeah. And when we create that space in our homes and in our classrooms, it just builds reading.
It's also a bonding experience when they're little. You know, they're up in your lap and, you know, cuddling. Yes. And it's such a comforting kind of a thing.
Yes.
And Sarah, you do something up at the hospital with expectant parents.
Yes, I talked to expectant parents. One of the hospital classes the last week is about brain building, literacy development, reading, the importance of all that. And what you said is one of the things that's really key. That, you know, we need language to be social, but actually the social is what teaches children language. And reading really helps with that, because when the child is sitting in your lap and you're holding a book around them, that extended physical contact, you know, it's kind of like I call it an extended hug. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're reading together, but that physical connection that the book is creating in the same space, that's really helping. It's helping them learn language. It's helping them pay attention. And it's facilitating that language development. So reading is really fundamental in that.
And these are expectant parents. So when do you tell people to start reading?
I always, you know, I really emphasize day one. I know, you know, there's a lot of emphasis before, and I totally agree with that. One of the things that I talk about is, you know, but I just try to keep talking about start on day one. It's really important. We talk about 1,000 hours of lap time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of to help people remember that it needs to start at the very beginning, because children are developing constantly, and, you know, they're starting those building blocks. And it doesn't mean it's too late. It doesn't mean you can't start later. It just means that, like, really starting that habit early of the half an hour, at least a half an hour a day, where you're sitting together and reading and focusing on that, that's really helping them. It's beginning, giving them the building blocks they need for their education down the road.
As you mentioned, we're raising a grandson who's 2.5 now, but I remember reading, we did reading from day one as well, but I remember him being really little and thinking, is he even getting any of it? But even just watch his little eyes looking at the book, where you would think they couldn't possibly comprehend that. Mm-hmm. So who knows how much they're actually taking in, right, at that young age?
They're taking in a lot. I refer to a book called 30 Million Words by Dr. Dana Susskind a lot when I talk in this class. And one of those phrases that she uses is that children are little statistical geniuses, you know, and they're honing in on the things that they hear the most. Mm-hmm. And they're really in that repetition that, you know, in the books themselves or repeating, talking about the same book, reading the same book, but even just, you know, the language and the sounds and everything, they are paying attention. I mean, they're paying attention to everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, what they, and they're, and then they start to focus in on the things they hear the most. And that is the basis for language development, because children have the capacity to learn.
They're little sponges.
Yeah, they are. They're little sponges.
Yeah. Mary, you said something, you talked about reading, you know, being for pleasure, but I'm also thinking reading can be, in a way, a comfort for kids who are going through whatever it is. Maybe a loss of a loved one.
Yes.
Maybe a new child coming into the home. Maybe it's an adopted child trying to figure out, you know, their place in the world. I mean, there are so many diversity. We don't have a lot of diversity here.
Yes.
So reading books about diversity can really teach kids a lot and make them comfortable in difficult situations.
Absolutely. There's a wonderful concept in children's literature that I love about windows and mirrors. Children's literature specialist and professor Rudine Sims Bishop came up with this, where she talked about how some books, and this isn't just for children, but it's for us as well, are mirrors, and they mirror our experience. And we need those sometimes to understand what we're going through and to sort of process it. And then there's the window books, which give us a window into someone else's life, someone else's world, someone who doesn't look like me or live like me. And I think that's a great measure when you're looking in your child's bookshelf or your classroom bookshelf. who are the children in my classroom? Do I have a lot of window books for them? Do I have a lot of mirror books for them? Do I have books for children because maybe there's a child in my class whose parents are going through a divorce or they've moved around a lot and they've had that experience of being the new kid? Do I have books about that in my classroom? Because if I don't, I need to go out and get them.
Yeah. All right, so let's start with the books. Mary, why don't you start? What's your first book?
Well, it's hard to know where to start, but I was thinking a lot about current events. Let me just start with that, because I was thinking a lot this morning about what's going on in Puerto Rico and the sort of catastrophe that's unfolding there. And anytime there's a big thing going on in the world, I think about how would we explain this to children?
Yeah, because they're going to hear the news.
They're going to be hearing it or overhearing snippets of conversation. So I thought of this book that I read a few years ago called Parrots Over Puerto Rico. And it's a picture book about these beautiful parrots that live in Puerto Rico and the sort of the effort to save this species of parrot. But it's also about Puerto Rico itself. So you can, it's sort of like an entry point for someone, a child or a grown up who maybe isn't that familiar with Puerto Rico. And it gives you sort of the lay of the land as well as this beauty. And the illustrations are incredible. So there's that. And then I was also thinking about all of the different things that have been happening in our country, you know, the flooding and the hurricanes, et cetera. So there's two other books for young-ish kids. One is called Flood by Alvaro Miller. And that's actually a wordless picture book. So you just go through that with your child. And it just sort of shows that family preparing for a flood, what happens, again, coming back home. And then there's another one that I love called River Friendly, River Wild. And that's a series of poems, again, about that same thing. There's a flood coming, how the family prepares, where they go, what they do, and then how they recover and how they rebuild when they get back home. So it's giving a child that sense of what's happening, but also that sense of safety at the end that I think they need in order to feel secure. But it develops empathy for other people in other parts of the country who are going through difficult times.
Right. And we'll have a link to the books we talk about today a little bit later on our website. So people go, wait, what was that again?
Yes. Yes.
We'll have that. All right, Sarah, what's your book?
Well, the first one I want to talk about is Brick by Brick. And I was also been thinking a lot about what's been going on. And this is a board book, and it is also wordless. And I'm really glad that you talked about wordless books, too, because it, there's so many great options with wordless books. What they really generate conversation between the adult and the child when they're reading together. And, you know, while you, usually while adults are focusing on the text, the children are looking at illustrations. And this allows you to be looking at the same thing and create the narrative yourselves. And that's such a great way to experience reading. So this is a wordless book, and it's about a little mouse who sees some flowers in a brick wall and takes the flowers, and a brick falls out. And the mouse starts to dismantle this wall, taking the brick by brick. That's where the title comes from. And gets some helpers along the way, and eventually realizes that they're on this island, and there are some other animals on the other island. And so, and you know, this is a little bit of a spoiler, but this is this beautiful spread where they start to take those bricks and build a bridge.
I love that.
So this is really about, you know, both dismantling, you know, what's holding you off from from the people around you, and then also creating that connection. And it is for very young children, but I think that this is a conversation that you absolutely can have with younger children.
Right. I brought a few myself from our library at home. And my grandson is really into construction vehicles. This is Good Night Construction Site. And this is by Sherry Dusky Rinker and Tom Lichtenfeld. And this is basically goes through the construction site, each vehicle, and we say goodnight to them. I'll just read a little bit here. This is the crane going to say, he slowly folds his boom back in, and then with one last sleepy grin, he tucks himself in nice and tight, then cuddles up and says goodnight. Shh, goodnight, crane truck, goodnight. And it goes through each vehicle, and it's a lot of fun. It's a little rhyming poetry in the book. And yeah, so this is one I would recommend. All right, Mary.
And that reminds me, I'll just say that children, it's up to us to sort of read their signal. So some children are really craving information and concepts and vocabulary. Right. And other children really want stories with emotion and drama and friendship or whatever, you know, emotional tasks they're working on. So I think it's good to have, again, a balance of both of those in your collection, and to key into what does your little reader want, and give it to them.
And yeah, sometimes they'll tell you, like, you know, there are nights he doesn't want to read this one. It's like, nope. And he will go over to the bookshelf and pull out the few books that he wants to read. Yeah. Mary, what's next on your list?
So one of the topics that we talked about when we were pulling this together was about bullying. So I wanted to mention one or two about that. And there's a book called Each Kindness by Jacqueline Woodson. That's a picture book. And it's about a new girl who comes to school and no one makes friends with her. Mm. And they sort of reject her. And it's about being what happens when a few kids in the class are unwelcoming and sort of turn a cold shoulder. And then the child ends up leaving and going to another school. So I think about a lot of the children I've known in my career who are transient for different mm-hmm. reasons.
Right.
And so this is really about community building. And so it's in a way, there's a little tinge of sadness in the story, but it also gives this great opportunity for how can we, you know, mm-hmm. as Sarah was just saying, build bridges.
Right. To conversation. Yes. The conversation starter with,
yes.
with your
fantastic
kids.
Fantastic
yeah.
for that. And then there's one that I just came across called Posted by John David Anderson. So this is a middle grade, and it's about what happens in a school when phones are banned. So there's no texting going on, and everyone is asked to communicate through Post-it notes. And so there's Post-it notes all over the schools and the lockers and the hallways, but then it kind of takes this turn into negativity because mm-hmm. some kids start getting mean with Post-it notes and doing some of the same things that happen on online bullying. So that whole issue is addressed, but in this very novel, kind of interesting way. So that's called Posted.
All right. Sarah.
Well, and I have two more picture books that I'd love to mention in line with some of what you're saying. The first is The Smallest Girl in the Smallest Grade, and it's by Justin Roberts and Christian Robinson. And Christian Robinson is an amazing illustrator. He's got a lot of great books out now, but I definitely really highly recommend looking up his stuff. So The Smallest Girl in the Smallest Grade actually is a great one to read with Each Kindness because there's a little bittersweet that you mentioned in that one of, you know, the sort of the failure to stand up, where The Smallest Girl in the Smallest Grade actually shows what that might look like. And she's noticing young Sally McCabe, and it also has the great rhyming that you talked about in Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site, is noticing the things that are happening around her that are not quite nice, that are not as nice, that and this is making her sad. And she's paying extra super special attention to everything that's happening around her. And finally, one day in the school cafeteria, she stands up and says, like, this isn't right. We have to stop hurting each other. We have to be there for each other. We have to stand up. So this is the modeling of, you know, like how you stand up and you say these things and you point them out and you show each other. And that starts a little mini revolution in her school where the students stand up and say, like, enough, and, you know, start being kinder to each other and paying attention to the world around them. So that is definitely one of my favorites from the last couple of years. But I also wanted to highlight A Hat for Miss Goldman, which is a story about knitting and love, and it's by Michelle Edwards and G. Brian Karras, and it's also a picture book. And it's a story of Sophia and Mrs. Goldman, their neighbors. Mrs. Goldman always knits hats for the little babies and the kids in her neighborhood to make sure that she's in the very beginning. It says, keeping kepis warm is our mitzvah, says Mrs. Goldman, kissing the top of Sophia's head. This is your kepi, and a mitzvah is a good deed. So that's what she does. So she keeps the kids in her neighborhood warm. And Sophia wants to do something for her, but she can't quite figure out what that is because she can't knit as well. And so she feels like she can't contribute, but she finally finds a way to make a contribution. So it's about kindness, but it's also about figuring out what you can do to contribute and to help your neighbors.
Right. You mentioned emotion a few minutes ago. Dragons Love Tacos. There's some emotion in this.
Yes,
there's some drama
this.
In this book. This is about dragons loving tacos and how to have a taco party for dragons. They hate spicy salsa. So I'm just going to read this page. Why do dragons hate spicy salsa? Well, just one drop of hot sauce makes a dragon's ears smoke. Just one single speck of hot pepper makes a dragon snort sparks. Spicy salsa gives dragons the tummy troubles. And when dragons get the tummy troubles, oh boy. So this boy has a taco party for the dragons, which is going well until they realize that there is some spicy salsa. And it's not a good scene. But yeah, they end up rebuilding in the end.
That is
Dragons Love Tacos, and that's by Adam Rubin with illustrations by Daniel Salmeri, if I say that correctly.
I love that. Yeah. So that makes me think about the term, the page turn, and how in a picture book, that's like the dramatic moment that
right.
when picture book creators are figuring out what goes on each page, and that sort of moment of suspense when you're turning the page, those can be like such fun, delicious moments when you're reading together.
Right.
And then there's the predictability aspect where if children want the same story over and over again, they have this sense of, you know, I'm in on the joke here. I know what's going to happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it makes those page turns of, oh, what's coming next, even more fun, because they just feel that sense of mastery over the story. So right. That's why I, you know, always encourage people who say, well, my child wants to hear the same book over and over. And it's for a reason.
Yeah.
And it really, it's satisfying on this whole very different level.
Yeah, and even before they can actually read, sometimes they want to tell you the story.
Yes.
And so there are certain pages where they've, you know, that stand out in their minds, and they'll, like, they might say what's going to happen on that next
page,
right? Mm-hmm.
That's right. And that's one of the cool things about the wordless books.
Yeah.
Is that you can be paging through that with your child, and they can narrate to you what's going on.
It's a lot of fun. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to suggest a book for us. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books for children and young adults with Sarah Hines from Eight Cousins Bookstore and Mary Cronin, educator, writer, and poet. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Perhaps you have a favorite children's book that you would like to suggest for our list this morning. Mary, I think it is your turn to go next.
Well, one of the things I was asked about was thinking about LGBT characters or themes in children's books. So I wanted to mention a book called This Day in June, which is by Gail Pittman. And that's a very rhyming, playful portrayal of a gay pride celebration. So I know there are a lot of families that I know on Cape Cod, both gay and straight, who love supporting the LGBT community. They go to Carnival in Provincetown or the Pride March in Boston. And that's a lovely way to sort of introduce that and again see that mirror experience in a picture book. And then another one that I just read recently is called Sparkle Boy by Leslie Newman. And this is about a boy who loves both, quote unquote, boyish things, but he's also sort of a little jealous of kind of the sparkly things that his sister has and some of the, you know, the sparkly skirt or sparkly nail polish. And he wants to wear or play with some of those things, too. And his family supports him. So it's a really nice portrayal of that. It's not saying that he's a transgender kid, but it's just kind of allowing for that playing with gender roles, which I really like. And his sister is the one who's a little, I'm not sure how I feel about this. And then she kind of comes around and ends up protecting him when someone else is criticizing him. So it's a really nice story for young children.
All right. Let's talk to Kathleen, who's calling us from Harwichport. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you so much for this program. I'm a former teacher, legislator, and a present grandmother, and love learning more about children's books. But I'm actually calling to recommend a book that I just published in August called The Cookie Loved Around the World. And it's a fun book because everyone loves chocolate chip cookies, which were invented in my hometown of Whitman, Massachusetts at the Toll House restaurant back in 1937. And this book is a juvenile historic fiction for 8 to 10-year-olds. And it tells how at the restaurant during the Depression, this cookie was accidentally invented. And it also gives the history of a woman entrepreneur who graduated from Framingham State Normal School in 1924, Ruth Graves Whitefield, and she followed her dreams, put all her life savings into this restaurant during the Depression, and then through hard work, made it a huge success. And then it goes on to tell other things that happened because of this cookie, and it just continues to grow in popularity. So I think it's a really good way to get kids to know about women's history, which we didn't learn about much when I was in school. And I'm hoping it will inspire kids to follow their dreams, also because I know how important nutrition and having enough food is to people. I'm donating money from the Sail Beach book to fight world hunger and hope the book will bring awareness to world hunger.
Well, Kathleen, thanks for sharing that. And Kathleen, your last name is Tian?
Yes.
Yes. So Kathleen Tan is the author of The Cookie Loved Around the World, the story of the chocolate chip cookie. Thanks so much. Toll House chocolate chip cookie, I should say. Kathleen, thanks for calling and sharing that. We'll have to check that out. New
Thank
book.
You so much.
Sarah is giving us a call from Wellfleet. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I hope you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay, great. I am calling to talk about another anti-bullying book that is so sweet. I read it to my four-year-olds. I've been reading it to them for a couple of years, actually. The title is One, O-N-E, and the author is Catherine Otoshi. And it is a beautiful, really simple little book about colors and numbers. And it goes through all the colors are kind of intimidated by red because red gets really big and really mad. And they're bullied by him for a while until one day one of the colors turns into the number one and rolls up to red and stands up to him and says, "That's not okay, red." And then the other colors look to see what that color did, and they all start turning into numbers as well. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And red gets really small and rolls away because he doesn't feel part of what the numbers are doing. And then they say, "Red, where are you going? You can be a number too." And so it's about standing up to bullies, but it's also about being kind, even to, you know, those of us who are having a hard time being kind.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, we need to teach each other how to be kind. And
right. And then teaching colors and numbers on top of it.
Right.
Bullies. Come on back. Come on back and be kind with us.
Love that, yes. Sarah. Thank you.
Sarah, thanks for that. We put that on our list. One by Catherine Otoshi. Thanks for calling in with that. 866-999-4626 if you have a book to suggest. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Sarah, what's next on your list?
Well, Mary was talking about LGBTQIA+ books, so I'm actually moving into middle grade, and I have something here called The Pants Project by Kat Clark. And this is middle grade, I would say upper middle grade. We usually called 8 to 12. This is probably good for 5th, 6th, 7th grade. And, you know, some people might be familiar with the book George that came out a few years ago, and I know that it did a show here. And I really feel like The Pants Project is kind of, the next as a little bit older, and all, but also has that really same sweet, great feel, same fantastic family. And Liv is very upset about the school's dress code. It is very strict. Boys wear pants, girls wear skirts, and Liv isn't, does not appreciate this, and is really starting to fight. So again, it's kind of about like standing up and fighting for the things that are important to you. But one of the things that I really love about this book is that it is a transgender story, and Liv starts to acknowledge that both to himself and to his family, that this might be influencing what these decisions. But the book is very careful to explain that this is not. There are other girls in the school who also feel very passionately about not wearing skirts, and that the sexualization of the students in the school because of the skirts. And so it really starts to have these nuances of gender and sexuality that I think that are really important in middle grade as they're kind of starting to grow up and realize and thinking about things, but done very well and very subtly, and really elicits a lot of the conversation that we're talking about that books can bring up.
Mm-hmm. I have a series here, and I think, Sarah, you're saying these are not part of my collection. These are something that came across my desk here at the radio station. It's called The Ordinary People Change the World series. Mm-hmm. This one is I Am Gandhi. The other one I have is I Am Sacagawea, and they are by Brad Meltzer, illustrated by Christopher, I'm not sure if I'm going to say this right, Iliopoulos. But these are great little books, and there's a whole series. They have Abraham Lincoln and, historical figures. I don't know if you've seen these, Sarah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
And basically tells the story of who these people are or were in a way a 6 to 9-year-old could understand.
Yeah, they're really heavily illustrated. They look like picture books, but they have a lot of text in them, so they really can kind of, they could range a little bit.
Yeah. All right, Mary.
Well, I just want to mention something that Kathleen said, because I appreciate her story, her book about history. And I think that's something that we can do with mm-hmm. very young children. And there's just a lot of good historical fiction and nonfiction for kids. And sometimes I think we forget that we can turn our kids on to historical awareness and really at young ages. So, the story about the chocolate chip cookie is a great entry point and something that every kid can relate to. There's another one that I've seen that I really like, and it's called Doing Her Bit, a story about the Women's Land Army of America. So it's set during World War I, and a lot of the farmers in our country were off fighting war, and this Women's Land Corps was formed, and all these women, and of course this was a time in our history when women didn't have a lot of autonomy and a lot of options for the kinds of work they did. They took over all the farm work. Mm-hmm. And so it's this window into a different time period that isn't really covered a lot in children's literature. And that's by Erin Hagar. It's called Doing Her Bit, a story about the Women's Land Army of America. And I'm a big proponent of sort of getting in, these wonderful child-appropriate stories into different facets of our history.
Yeah, and I was going to say, another one that's great, I think, for the history is Martin Sandler, and I'm sure you are familiar with, he's a local author.
Yes.
He's got, Abraham Lincoln, the first subway built in America, and John F. Kennedy. I mean, I think he's written something like 100 books. I mean, he's very prolific. But I love his books. Oh, he has How the Beatles Changed the World. But he's... I love the way, reading it, you don't feel like you're reading a book that's meant for a young reader. Mm-hmm. I enjoy them, I think, as much as mm-hmm. the young readers do.
Yes.
So that's another good one to put on your list.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'll chime into that and just say we're seeing a lot of story collections now, that are collections of whether they're history, they're these little mini biographies, but they're not necessarily just about one person, but sort of a collection of people. This summer, obviously, was asked a lot about this because of the book She Persisted that came out by Chelsea Clinton and had 13 women who have changed American history. But going through our sections, there are 33 trailblazers in science, or 50 women in science, engineering, and technology. I'm not going to be able to remember all the titles, but 19 African-American pioneers in various disciplines. And so I'm kind of seeing this a lot in nonfiction right now where they're not even right now, but seeing this a lot in nonfiction where there are these sort of collections. So you get these little vignettes on people, and then maybe if you want to learn more, you can explore. But it's a really great way to sort of present a lot of information.
Yeah. What's your next book, Sarah?
Well, so I actually had one other middle grade that I wanted to talk about, and it's called Cilla Lee Jenkins, Future Author Extraordinaire, by Susan Tan. And this is also middle grade, probably a little bit younger middle grade, so good for third to fifth grade. And Cilla Lee Jenkins... realizes that she knows she wants to be an author. She really loves to write. But it again, I love the books that have these great stories, but then these like little pieces that are infused throughout them to kind of spark conversations if you see them. And one of the things that happens to her is that somebody asks her in a grocery store, "What are you?" And she is, and her father is Korean and her mother is Caucasian. Her father is, my apologies, her father is Chinese and her mother is Caucasian. And so somebody says to her, "What are you?" And she thinks to herself, like, "What am I?" And she decides that she's an author. And that's what she is. And so the book is about her sort of developing that identity as an author, but also her helping to reconcile her two families that are both live in the same town, but don't really spend a lot of time with each other. She spends time with both families, but they don't connect very much. And so part of what the story is about is bringing those two families together.
Mm. We have an email from Megan who says, "I have a book for my daughter and it's called Big Hair, Don't Care." And it's a celebration of beautiful African-American hair about a little girl and her friend who both have gorgeous, full, natural hair and wear it in all different ways. And they don't care that it's big or that it makes them different. It's a wonderful, fun, and funny celebration of African-American beauty.
Yep. I love that.
That's a good one.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, I've been thinking a lot about immigrant stories recently because that's such a big topic of our national conversation. So I picked out a few that I really like. There's one that's fairly new called American Street by E.B. Zoboi, and it's a young adult novel that was actually just longlisted for the National Book Award. And that's a story about a Haitian girl coming to the United States. She gets separated from her mother. She's living with relatives in Detroit. So it's about enculturation. It's about having your heart in two places, separation. It's incredible. It's a wonderful story. And then there's another book that I read. Again, this is kind of keying into the history. So this would be for middle grade, and it's called Fred Korematsu Speaks Up by Laura Atkins and Stan Yogi. So Fred was the son of Japanese immigrants growing up as a very American teenager in California in the 1940s. And then his family was sent away from their home to an internment camp during World War II. And he really resisted in various ways, trying, you know, not wanting to be exiled there, questioning authority, finally going through the legal system. So it's a sort of, it's another one of these upstander stories, somebody who stands up. And it sheds a light on this part of our history that a lot of people don't know that much about. Right. And it's very appropriate for middle grade kids.
Oh, that sounds like a good one. All right, Sarah.
Well, I would actually, in addition to working at Eight Cousins, I'm part of the New England Children's Booksellers Association, and we've just put out a list of some windows and mirror books that we think are fantastic for 2017. So I'm just going to mention a couple that are in line with that. And one is My Beautiful Birds, which is a picture book. Which is a picture book, and it is also about, it's an immigration story. So I definitely recommend that one. There have been a lot of great ones that have come out lately. Oh, My Beautiful Birds by Suzanne Del Rizzo. Also Journey, which is a picture book that came out a couple of years ago. I don't have it listed in front of me, so I can't remember the author's name right now, but definitely recommend that one. One of the books that's, actually two of the books that are on this list that we've put out are Piecing Me Together by Renee Watson. And this is a young adult novel, but I definitely would recommend this as a crossover middle grade and young adult. It could go a little bit younger, even though we would consider it probably to be sort of eighth, ninth grade and up. In terms of content, it could go a little bit younger. And it is a story about Jade, who lives in one neighborhood and goes to school in another. So it's a little bit about crossing between two neighborhoods. And there's going to be a lot of comps, I think, with this one, because we've seen a lot in YA lately about kids with that concept, you know, living in one neighborhood, going to a school in another neighborhood, and dealing with that sort of transitioning between the two. But Jade is an artist, and so this Piecing Me Together, it has this beautiful collage image on the front, and it's because she's trying to find these different pieces of her life to create her whole identity. And I love this book for so many reasons, but primarily because of the great relationships that she has with her mother, with her mentor, the way that they interact with each other, which just felt so real to me when I was reading this. There was sort of like, you know, respect, but a little bit of frustration about their two roles with each other in her lives, her relationship with her friend from her neighborhood, relationship with her friend from school, and then the way they interact. I mean, there's just so many great relationships going on here and the dynamics between people, and they're not all simple, that can change in a conversation. So this is just a really fantastic book about Jade. So highly recommend it.
I just looked up Journey by Aaron Becker. This sounds like a good book, a wordless
It's actually, there's another one.
This one sounds interesting, too. A lonely girl draws a magic door on her bedroom wall, and through it escapes into a world where wonder, adventure, and danger abound.
Yeah. That sounds
like a, so we got two books named Journey.
Yes, yeah, and that one also great one, great wordless book.
866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to suggest a book for us. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books for children and young adults with Sarah Hines from Eight Cousins Bookstore and Mary Cronin, educator, writer, and poet. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to add to our list. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we found the other The Journey. This one, it was Francesca Sanna. Says, with haunting echoes of the current refugee crisis, this beautifully illustrated book explores the unimaginable decisions made as a family leave their home and everything they know to escape the turmoil and tragedy brought by war. Mary, what's up next on your list?
Well, I wanted to mention the Reading Without Walls Challenge, and that was put forth by Jean Luen Yang, who is an author himself. And I believe his title is the National Ambassador for Children's Literature. He's got this sort of national position of influence in terms of children's books. And so he put out this challenge for people, for children, child readers, and the people who select books for children with, let's see, it's got three different things to think about. Number one is read a book about a character who doesn't look like you or live like you. So I love that one. Number two, read a book about a topic you don't know much about. And number three, read a book in a format that you don't normally read for fun. Maybe a chapter book or a graphic novel if you've never read one, or a book in verse. So this is sort of, I think, a nice prompt for getting not only children but all of us out of our comfort zones. We have our usual area of the library or bookshelf that we go to, and this is inviting us to sort of stretch our boundaries a little bit and experiment with books that we might normally read. And I just love that, and I think it's a great guideline for children.
Exactly. Sarah?
Well, I want to follow up on that. If people are interested in learning a little bit more about diversity in children's books and a lot of the statistics that have been coming out in the last few years, there are some great graphics that highlight that. Diversity in Children's Books 2012, which you can find based on the statistics from the CCBC. And then there was an updated one, Diversity in Children's Books in 2015, which is based on the same statistics from the Cooperative Children's Book Center. So there's a lot of great information out there if people are interested in learning more. And I want to just chime in something that Mary said earlier about that, you know, looking at your own bookshelves and thinking about what you're reading and what kids are reading and what it's being handed. I mean, it's just really important for us to all think about diversifying our own reading habits and bookshelves. Mm-hmm. So the last book that's on that I brought in is called Saints and Misfits, and it is a novel by S.K. Ellie, and it is also a teen book, and it is one of the books that's on our Windows and Mirrors list from NECBA. And this is a book about Yana. She is in high school. She's a photographer, and there's a lot going on in this story, and that so I'm trying to figure out like which part am I going to focus on the first. But she at the very beginning. She tells the reader that she was attacked at a party. Somebody came in, and so nothing really happened. But so it's but she's now trying to figure out what to do because the boy who's in this is well respected in her community at her mosque. People, you know, he's perceived as being a really devout person, and so she knows that saying something about him is going to create a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. So again, I mean, this is a theme in a lot of our books, I think, but you know, finding your voice and her standing up and figuring out who she's going to tell and how and what she's going to say. But along the way, you meet all sorts of great people in her neighborhood and her mosque and her friends at school. And I learned so much when I was reading this book about, you know, different nuances in the community and the conversations that they would have with each other. So I really felt like I learned a lot, but I also just really thought she was a fantastic character, loved her narrative voice. And I was really struck in this book about how it managed to touch on so many topics, but in a really gentle way. And I didn't feel sort of weighed down at the end of this kind of like her finding her voice. And this is also a little bit of a spoiler, but to have her be believed when she finally does speak up. And I just really appreciated seeing that in a teen book that, you know, not that, that there will be people who will stand with you and who will believe you if you speak up. I think that's an important message to get out there.
We have an email from Jed. He says, a few books to recommend for pre-readers. Hippos Go Berserk by Sandra Boynton. All of her books are great. She's great. Second to fourth grade, The Adventures of the Mad Scientist Club from 1963. Got my second grader to read, and he's never stopped. He says, for LGBTQT, Shadow Man by Melissa Scott. Science fiction, speculative fiction for older than 15, important exploration of the concept of five different genders. So thanks for that, Jed. 866-999-4626 if you'd like to add a book to our list, or you can shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. What's next on your list, Mary?
Well, I wanted to just say one thing about the diversity and the statistics, because this is something that I talked to my early childhood educators about at the college, is that you know, if there were 3,400 books published in 2016, children's books, and 8% of them were about African-American children, 4% of them were about Latino children, then that tells me that when I go into a bookstore, I'm not necessarily going to see, I have to intentionally seek out and find books about children of color. Because I want those on my bookshelf as a teacher. I want those on my bookshelf as a parent. No matter what my race or ethnicity is, I want to be able to to give that sense of that multicultural world to children who are growing up now. So I always use that term intentionality with my teachers, that sometimes it's going to take some extra work or reminding ourselves of this pressing need in order to make sure that our bookshelves reflect the world that we live in.
So, as a bookseller, I was just going to say that because, you know, walk into the library or you walk into the bookstore and there are so many books and it gets overwhelming even when you don't know what you're looking for. And I'm sure you have people all the time who come in and say, hey, how do I find a book on whatever it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I would actually say that when you walk into a bookstore, I mean, I would hope when you walk into our bookstore and in talking to other bookstores around the country that, you know, bookstores are about discoverability. Libraries are about discoverability. Mm-hmm. And so I really feel like it's our job to help you find those books. Mm-hmm. So maybe that proportionately the statistics about publishing, I don't want those to be the statistics in our store because this is all about discoverability and I want to help you find the books that you need. But yes, that is definitely one of the sort of favorite aspects of being in the store is the challenges and the research when somebody comes in and they're looking for something specific. And while it's always really satisfying to just know that one book that they need, then it's also really satisfying to go do some research for them. And that's what libraries and bookstores are all about, you know, helping people find the books that they need.
And it's so funny. We were in the library last week and I couldn't remember the name of this book, but it was something about, you know, the different emotions, you know, faces, facial expressions and emotions. And the two librarians who were there in the Children's Life, they're like, all right, and they were on a mission now to find this book.
Doing challenge. It's fun.
Yeah, so don't be afraid to ask what
you're
looking
for.
Yeah.
Yes, my librarian in Harwich, Ann Carpenter, is just incredible, and I can go in there with any issue or idea I'm thinking about, and she's amazing.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Use them, resources.
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay, right. There's another book I wanted to mention that's pretty fun and interesting, and it has a local tie. It's called The Nantucket Sea Monster, A Fake News Story.
Oh, I love this.
Okay.
I saw this. Yes, yes.
So this is by Darcy Patterson. It's set on Nantucket, and I think it should be in every elementary classroom, you know, definitely locally. So it basically poses this question. Was there really a sea monster spotted off the coast of Nantucket in 1937? Because lots of people said they saw it.
Yeah.
And in fact, the newspapers on Nantucket reported it. So it must be true, right? That's kind of the question that this book poses. And then it sort of unravels what really happened and that it wasn't actually the way that people were saying. So it changes, to me, if you read this book with children, it changes the way they think about newspapers and news, and it turns them into sort of questioning and critical readers and thinkers. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, obviously such a huge topic in our country right now. So it's doing it in this very playful, fun way that has the local tie to Nantucket, and it's just, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. And it's true, you want them to question, because especially if we think of social media now and people put things up and they go, oh my, what's, and they just share it without actually checking to see, is this true?
Yeah.
That's a good one. We need books like that for all ages.
Yes, we do.
Sarah, what's next on your list?
Well, I love the comment that you made about thinking critically, because ultimately that's really what it's, a lot of it is about for, you know, helping kids think critically. So I actually finished the list that I brought with me, but if I'm going to have extra time, cannot not talk about Jason Reynolds. So, you know, he has about 5 books out now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and every single one of them is amazing, so can't really compare. But he does have 2 new ones out, Patina, which is the second in a series that he's doing for middle grade, and it's about a track team. And the first one was Ghost, and now Patina is out, and we get 2 more characters on that track team that will be coming. And I can't say that, I can't say that I like Patina better than Ghost, but what I can say is that, you know, Patina, because it's a second, just gives us a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So Ghost is there, the character is there, but we learn a little bit more about Patina. I love that one. And then Long Way Down, which is this YA book that's coming out in October. So it's not out yet, but it's going to be coming out, and it's a book in verse, and it is stunning and heartbreaking, and it's amazing. It's just a fantastic book, and he does this amazing thing. You know, he's talking a little bit about gun violence, a little bit of paranormal, kind of. You have to figure out what's going on here. A little bit of the gothic, I guess, where you're not quite sure, you know, what's real, what's not real. But the way that he breaks up words on the page and the layout of the poetry and everything, you know, just it creates so much more meaning. So I think this is going to be a fantastic one for classrooms to really look at, you know, how language is used to convey meaning and just and the power of what he's saying in this book.
And you mentioned YA, which means young adult. And that seems to be a hot genre right now? Young, I mean, there are a lot of adults reading YA now. Are you finding that in the store that you, I mean, people buying YA for adult reading?
Yeah, we do, and you're right to identify that young adult is. It is a crossover, you know, so we definitely see a lot of people reading, so adults reading. But I'll also say that right now it's board books. You know, it's kind of to the other end of the, you know, the spectrum. So no,
love.
So we're seeing YA, and we're still seeing strong YA in our store, but we're also seeing this sort of boom in board books and what I call baby nonfiction, you know, this, you know, to explain concepts about the world. And so, both. So it's kind of on for us both ends.
I like
right
that
now.
Term.
Yeah, baby nonfiction. I like that too. And, you know, I was thinking about it because I you know, wonder when, you know, publishers, how they classify sometimes. And I'm sure you both have read Lauren Wolk's two books, Wolf Hollow, which I thought, really? Is that? I mean, I guess it could be why, but I feel like there's some adult theme in there.
Yes, exactly.
And I know that was her publisher who decided that. And then her new book, what is it, Beyond the Sea? Beyond the Bright Sea, which both books. Highly recommend.
Beautiful.
She's a fabulous writer.
I have two other YA books I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
Okay, so one is really fun, and it's a window book for me because it's set in the South, and I've never lived there and haven't traveled there much, called Georgia Peaches and Other Forbidden Fruit.
I love the title.
J. Robin Brown. Mm-hmm. So it's about a girl whose dad, and the reason I'm mentioning these two books, that they both talk about religion in different ways, which isn't treated a lot in YA. So this is a girl whose dad is a minister, and she is a lesbian. She's out as a teen. But dad has a new job in a different location, and he's a widower, and he's remarrying. And so he asks her to sort of go back in the closet for a year so that he can, you know, get through the first year of the new marriage and the stepmom and the new town and the new church. And incredibly, it's funny, it's touching, it's wonderful. It's about LGBT, it's about religion, it's about the South. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. What's your second one?
And the second one is called Psalm for Lost Girls by Katie Bayerl. And Katie has a real connection to Cape Cod. And so this book is actually set in a New England town, a fictional New England town called New Avon, which I kept picturing somewhere near New Bedford. And it's about a girl named Callie, and her sister Tess was considered a saint in their area because people started associating all these miracles, and then her sister tragically dies. So Callie is both mourning the loss of her sister Tess and really resisting this whole sainthood, you know, this following that she has. So it turns into sort of a mystery as well as a great family story about trying to reclaim her sister and the memory of her sister. It's about grief. It's very, very Massachusetts, New England-y.
All right. I'm going to say one more, and this is a local author here. This is by John Whalen, and this is called The Little Sock Pirate. And if you ever wondered what happens to those socks that go missing in the dryer, well, this is the story of what happens. This is the little sock pirate who has a peg leg, and he sneaks into your house at night, gets into that dryer to find just the right sock, because he plays so hard all day that sock always gets dirty and sometimes gets a little hole in it. So he has to find... And he only takes what he needs, which is that one sock. So it's The Little Sock Pirate by John Whalen, illustrations by Clara Urban. And we should mention that all of the books that we talked about today will have a link to the list of those books probably later this afternoon. It takes us a little bit to put the list together, but you can find that at our website, capeandislands.org. And just real briefly, like in 20 seconds here, it's Banned Book Week?
It is Banned Book Week, sponsored by the ALA, which is the American Library Association. So we're in the middle of it.
So are we reading books that were once banned? Is that what it is?
Reading books that are banned, also educating yourselves about why books are banned. They're banned for lots of different reasons, some of which might really surprise you. So check out your library. I'm sure they have a display.
Yeah. All right. Sarah Hines, 8 Cousins Bookstore, and Mary Cronin, educator, writer, and poet. Thanks so much for being here this month.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.